Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode of The Game Plan on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm joined by my co-host, Charlie Coyner, here as we progress through the season. So, Coach Coyner, great to have you here on the podcast again.
Keith, great to be back, and we're heading into weeks, probably four, five, or six, depending on what part of the country you are in high school football, and we're getting in the thick of it, so it's good.
Coach, I'm excited about our guest today that you've lined up for us, and we talk all the time about scheme today, I think quite a bit, and everybody gets focused on how those lines are drawn. You do it all the time, Charlie. You're drawing up all those lines. But sometimes we forget about the fundamentals, and today we have a throwback in that regard. Tell us a little bit about our guest today.
In my opinion, Keith, I think we all, if we're humble enough to look at our careers, and some of you listening right now might be in the midst of this and don't even realize it, but there are people who take you under their wing and who mentor you at a very young age. And I say a very young age, a very young coaching age. And I was fortunate at Appalachian State under Mack Brown to meet our guest today, John Palermo. And Coach Palermo, admittingly, I had to learn a lot of football and didn't know a whole lot. And John Palermo took me under his wing and helped me a lot. Ended up taking me up to the University of Minnesota in 1987. And so to me, that is a big deal in a couple ways. The first way, once again, I think it's hard to make it to where a lot of guys want to go in football these days unless you have someone who is mentoring you, teaching you, and maybe even standing up and speaking for you when it comes time to get a job and things like that. And that's what Coach Palermo did for me. But to take it a step further, and I didn't even know it when it was happening, but to be around someone that was so very, very disciplined and demanding about the fundamentals and the technique at an early age in coaching was so instrumental in helping me down the road. Because as my career began to blossom, so to speak, and I began to learn more about scheme, I had a sound fundamental background about exactly the way the stance should look, exactly where the eyes should be, exactly where that step should be. And I'm talking it's 6, it's not 8 inches, and that type of thing. And I think that was instrumental in helping me with my career and becoming what I hope, you know, was a good football coach. And that's where it started. Started with John Palermo and guys like that. And I take it a step further just from the standpoint of, you know, as we get talking to him here today, his career, he was a head coach for 1 year and may have been a coordinator a couple of places, but he is a lifelong defensive line coach. I think there's something to be said for that, to be an expert at your trade. And he is a true expert at defensive line play. And I think when we get him on here today, it's going to be a real treat for all of the coaches out there, but particularly young football coaches that want to understand the trade of coaching the defensive line and how it should be done.
Coach, I'm really excited to get him on the phone here today. And before we do that, I'll give you a brief rundown, give our listeners a brief rundown of his resume. So he started his coaching career in 1974 and spent a few years at the high school level at Bainbridge High School in Georgia. From there, he went on to NC State as an assistant, 1979 Austin Peay, 80 to 82 he was at Memphis State, 83 to 84 Appalachian State, 84 to 87 Minnesota, 88 to 89 at one of my favorite all-time teams ever. He was at Notre Dame with Lou Holtz. I was reading up on him in Lou Holtz's book, so it was exciting to see some of his quotes in there. After Notre Dame, went back to Austin Peay, and then spent some time with Barry Alvarez, 91 through 2005, as an assistant with Barry Alvarez at Wisconsin. From there, Miami, Florida, Tennessee Tech, and then to the NFL, 2008-09 with the Redskins, back to college, 2010-11, Middle Tennessee. From Middle Tennessee, went on to the Tennessee Volunteers, and then it was at Pitt, and finally at Ave Maria University. Along the way, like you said, Coach, he's been a defensive line coach pretty much the whole time, And I'm excited to get him on the phone with you here today. So let's go to Coach Palermo. Coach Palermo, really excited to have you here. Thanks for taking time to be on the podcast.
Thank you, Charles. I'm excited to be with you today.
Coach, I go back into my career as a football coach, and obviously I think we all have someone in our past that serves as somewhat of a father figure football-wise, and they help get you into the profession and start you out, and obviously you're one of those for me. The things that stand out to me about you in my 30-year coaching career was that I was fortunate to get with someone like you and the defensive line early on in my career, because I think sometimes young coaches get directly to the scheme, and they think that the game is all about scheme, and particularly these days. I felt fortunate to learn football from you at that age and that level, just because I felt like I got a strong fundamental background and technique background. It served me well throughout my career. But today, what we want to do is we want to pick your brain as one of the all-time premier defensive line coaches out there, just about the fundamentals of the game at defensive line, because that's what you're known for. And some of it, philosophy-wise, I guess, I learned from you, and it was shoulder square, hat, eyes, hands, feet, the whole bit. And I look at football today and I see a little bit more of up the field, read on your way to the quarterback. And some of that may be necessary depending on the offense you're playing. But I just, in a general sense, want to kick this off by asking you, what do you see right now as far as the game, defensive line-wise, fundamentals and what they're teaching as compared to maybe back 20, 30 years ago? And is there a reason for it or not?
Well, yeah, there's a reason for it, Charles, but if you go back, it used to be protect the linebackers, keep the linemen off the next level. So basically, defensive linemen, when I first started out, were kind of like the sacrificial lambs. You know, they were going to keep the tackles and the guards and centers. They were going to keep those people off the linebackers so the linebackers could run and make plays. And it was understood back then that you were doing that in order to stop the run. That was the most important thing, was to stop the run, all right? And then what I learned from Coach Holtz, and he could have cared less if you had one sack in a game, but what he cared about, which I still think is important, is pass rush lanes, proper distribution, get your hands in the quarterback's face, match the hand, which basically means if he's a right-handed quarterback, you want to get your left hand up in the air to try to take away those throwing lanes. So that was more important. Putting pressure on the quarterback was more important than actually having sacks. Nowadays, the way the game is, it went from read and react and collision to now get up the field, okay, and then react to what you see. And the one thing that hasn't changed from either one of those techniques is you still have to have great hands, great eyes, and great feet. And you have to be able to, if you're getting up the field, you got to be able to stick your foot in the ground as fast as you can so that you can change direction. You got to be able to stab and grab, stab with your inside hand, grab with your outside hand, and always keep a good base.
You haven't been out of coaching that long. And so toward the end, as you were coaching and college, you might be going up against a spread offense one week, and next week you might end up playing a flex bone team option. What did you talk to your defensive lineman about? I'm sure you obviously addressed the overall concept as far as what offense you're playing, but did you have a philosophy about, okay, this week they're throwing it 40 times a game, and this is what we're going to do. All right, now we're playing Paul Johnson's flex bone, and we've got to stay square on the line of scrimmage, get our hands on the defensive lineman, old, you know, like you were talking about a little bit, old-time football there. But how did you approach it toward the end of your coaching career?
Well, even towards the end, I didn't change much from the standpoint of it. If you were playing an option team, it was, in my mind, critical that you collision, the five-technique collision, the tackle trying to get up to the backer, or the three-technique collision the guard so that the guard can't get up to the backer, so that you could be sound on your option responsibilities. You know, it always used to go, if you get an inside release, the defensive end or tackle, depending on what scheme you're in, gets an inside release, he wants to collision that offensive tackle he was responsible for the dive. The linebacker scraped, and he was responsible for the quarterback. And then somebody, whether it be an outside linebacker or somebody in the secondary, would be responsible for the pitch. So you always tried to be option sound versus now you're playing a spread team, all right? And what you can do with the spread teams that you didn't have to do back in the old days, which a lot of times in the old days, you were still playing seven-man fronts. Now, everybody's in some kind of eight-man front, whether it's coming out of the secondary or an outside linebacker adding on. Now, you can take that five technique. You don't have to collision them. You can use what we call a bend technique to where he can get up the field, which gives you a great pass rush. And then if he gets any kind of inside release by the tackle, stick that foot in the ground as fast as you can, redirect, and then bend to the quarterback, or excuse me, to the dive, and then the linebacker can still scrape to the quarterback. It's really come down to now with the zone read stuff, it's more of a double option than it is a triple option. And we really just, all we would do with the three technique or the five technique is just add a go to it. You're playing a five-go this week. You're playing a three-go instead of playing a read technique.
Coach, I'm seeing more and more teams use the, especially against spread, the four-eye technique. What advantages do you see to that technique, especially when we're looking at the spread offenses today?
Well, when you go four-eye technique or a four technique, what you're doing is you're getting some version of a 3-4 defense, mm-hmm. which to me is a way to hide the old, now you're going back and you're reading and reacting. Go see what that tackle's going to do. If he outside releases, you got to cut your eyes back inside as fast as you can for any kind of trap, or depending on technique that you're playing. The way we did it was if we got an outside release with a four eye, we just sat and then fell late on the dive, but really had the quarterback responsibility and let the linebacker run through and take the dive. And really, that's what the 3-4 is. The 3-4 to me was a way for Nick Saban and the coaches that are very good at coaching it to still play read and react football, all right? But now you're only doing it with three guys versus doing it with four. And then the other part of it is when you play a four-eye, the tighter to the ball, the tougher the angle is for the offensive tackle to either block down or to be able to cut you off.
Coach, I know you also mentioned that, especially talking with about Lou Holtz and what he wanted to see out of those guys collisioning and offensive linemen. Let's get into, I guess, the fundamentals of that a little bit. When you say collision, are you getting hands on them? Are you getting a shoulder into them? What things were you coaching up in your defensive linemen?
Well, again, it kind of changed over the years. It used to be you had to get the tip of your pad, your inside pad, under the tip of his outside pad to knock him off his course. Now it's become still collisioning, but more with your hands and pushing with your hands so that you can get off of a block a little bit quicker, especially like play action. To me, play action's always been the hardest. When you try to collision any kind of inside release and then you're going to hit with your shoulder, you get tied up with the blocker a little bit longer than what you do if you just use your hands. So I think it's changed a little bit that way. And again, our big deal was always this: stop the run. Mm-hmm. Okay, stop the run first, and that was Lou's philosophy and a lot of other mentors that I had, and that included pass, whether it was a jailbreak screen, whether it was a quick hitch, those were still all running plays. So everybody had to be in position to make a play. So once the receiver caught the ball, don't let him run with it. Once the running back gets his hands on the ball, don't let him run with it. Keep good pass rush lanes, so the quarterback can't pull the ball down and run with it. Okay. Now I see guys, they're just trying to make plays. They're trying to break all these sack records. You know, I had a great player when I was at Wisconsin by the name of Thomas Burke. And I remember before the season, he had a really good junior year. I think he had 14 sacks. And I said, well, Tom, what are you going to do this year? He goes, I'm going to have 22 sacks. I said, there's no way you're going to have 22 sacks. I think he had 23 sacks or 24 sacks his senior year. You know, and it wasn't because he was just running up the field. It's just because he had a great motor, so he could read, react, and then come out, particularly on play-action passes, and he had great strength on drop-back passes to be able to knock tackles back. And that's what you're trying to do when you're a five technique. I don't want to jump around on you a little bit, but when you play a five-go, you're getting up the field first, what you're trying to do is go from point A to point B as fast as you can. And we always picked out like 3 yards behind the offensive tackle on his inside leg. That's where we wanted to get to as fast as we could. And what that did was it always made the offensive tackle make a decision. He was either going to be soft and come straight back on you, where you could just sink your hips and bull rush him. He was going to overset you outside, which meant now you could make an inside move. Or he couldn't get out of his stance fast enough and you ran by him. And I don't think that's changed much. But to me, what's changed more in football, particularly in the defensive line, is that, and I'm not going to say it's everybody, but it's a lot of people are more worried about guys making big plays than playing good, sound, fundamental football. And as Charles talked about earlier, it's still about hands, it's still about eyes, it's still about feet. You can't play football without a good base. There's times in the game of football where you have to play with your shoulders square. There's times in football where you have to keep your play side arm and leg free. And we always said keep your pads out over your toes, which basically meant you got to be lower than the guy you're playing against.
Coach, you said that you didn't want to jump around unless you actually took – you actually took me anyway, exactly where I was going, what I was going to ask you next. We talked about the run, and then you kind of led into the pass rush there. A lot of our audience are high school coaches, and they're coaching younger players. If you were coaching, let's say, and start maybe on the outside, as you were talking about, obviously the thing that you emphasized, the five technique, the five go, is to get up the field to a certain point and get off and seeing the ball and maybe a little different, or not maybe, but a different attitude when it's third down. But as far as if you were teaching pass rush moves and, you know, the common bull, speed, rip, swim, push, pull, or whatever, and you had a 14 or 15-year-old, how would you go about that? Would you limit them to two or three till they perfected it, or would you just give them the whole bit and keep letting them get better at all of them at once? How would you approach it?
Yeah, I think – you hit the nail on the head. I think you got to limit them to two or three moves when you first start out teaching. And I always told those guys, once you learn those moves, now you can play your personality, which meant now you could, off of your chop rip on the outside edge, now if the guy oversets you or you felt pressure on that shoulder, now you could squat, spin back inside, and get up the field. So you could have a spin move off of that, except that they'd have to give you the spin move. You don't teach, like, you just go in there and chop, rip, and spin, and the offensive tackle still has his shoulder square, and he just keeps pushing you down inside. It's when you feel the pressure on that shoulder, you sink your hips, and you whip back, and you elbow the guy to get up the field. So I think I would caution people to try to teach too much in a short period of time. I think if they can master a stutter and a bull rush, if they could master a speed rush, whether the speed rush be a slap rip on the outside or whether it be a chop rip on the outside. And the same thing, technique-wise, what you've got to be able to do is, whether it's a slap rip or a chop rip, you got to be able to get that inside shoulder down and get that inside leg through in order to be effective at those moves. Because, again, when I first started out, push, pull, and swim was like one of the big techniques, right? But the whole key to the push-pull-swim wasn't just the push-pull-swim. It was once you made the push-pull and the swim, it was getting your toes pointing back inside to the quarterback, which meant you had now to get your inside leg through in order to do that. Or if you kept your toes vertical, if you kept them going up the field, all the offensive linemen had to do was just keep pushing you up the field. So I would keep it simple. I have a counter move inside if the guy overset me. I would have a stutter bull rush if he was soft. And if I had good speed, I'd have a couple variations off of a speed rush, which would be a slap rip or a chop. You chop with the inside hand and rip back up with the inside arm.
Coach, one other quick question, because we just talked about the run and we talked about the pass. If you're a defensive line coach, and you, once again, you've got a young 14, 15-year-old defensive lineman, what are you teaching them? And it may be different with a run, pass, down and distance and that type of thing. What are you teaching them to look at with their eyes pre-snap? Are you looking at the hat? Are you looking at the ball? Are you catching the ball out of the peripheral? How do you teach that?
Well, pre-snap, the first thing I would try to teach them is they've got to be able to see the ball out of the corner of their eye, okay, instead of turning their heads and staring. They need to look at the different levels of the offensive line. A lot of times you can tell if the guard's up and the tackle's back, you're going to get what we, if you're a three technique, you're going to get what we call scoop block. If the tackle's up, a lot of times you're going to get some kind of inside release by him on some kind of veer release, which meant that as he's coming inside, his head is up, trying to get to the next level. And the other thing I would always tell him is keep your eyes up. Too many times young players have their heads down because their eyes are down. And we really did, Charles, we went more to, we were always going to read in the end, after we got off on a ball, we're going to read the head of the offensive lineman that we were playing against. Trying to, again, look at angles. If he's flat, you're probably going to get scooped. If it's up the field, you're probably going to get a tackle blocking down on you. If it's outside, if he's trying to spear your outside number, that's where the ball's going. It's going to be some kind of toss sweep or stretch play. So we always still tried to, even though it's changed, where you're reading on the run or you're basically getting off on the ball and then reacting to what you see, we still always tried to keep our eyes on the hat of the offensive lineman that we covered.
That makes sense.
Coach, in today's trend of RPOs and actually teams going into screen pass options as well, where you'll hear teams that 75-80% of their passing game is actually coming in a run pass option scenario where the offensive line doesn't care where the ball's going, they're just blocking run. Thinking of that and seeing that that's a growing trend in football, and if you were facing one of those teams, what becomes your approach and what you're really going to have your defensive line focus on, whether that's in a particular week over or over the course of the year where you're going to see that a lot?
Yeah. Well, first of all, they need to change the rules. They got linemen down, they got linemen downfield every time they pull the ball out and they throw it. To me, if you're a defensive lineman, you have got to play the run first if you get a run release. And then you got to react back if it's any kind of play-action pass. And I know that sounds simple, but yet if you don't pay attention to what the offensive lineman across from you is doing, what's going to happen is you're going to start running up the field and they're going to hand the ball off and they're going to start gashing you. It's funny, I just happened to be watching the Wisconsin BYU game the other day, and BYU was running a speed sweep and then running a dive off the speed sweep. The linebacker from Wisconsin was getting kind of caught half pregnant out there. He was like, well, do I play the speed or do I play the dive? Well, he ran out and played the speed. They handed the ball off for 29 yards. And then he stayed inside, all right, and played the dive. And then they handed the ball off to the speed sweep, and he went for 20 yards. So what they try to do is they try to get you in some kind of predicament, catch 22 off of it. And then the third option of it is they can fake them all and play action pass you.
Mm-hmm.
So I still think in order to be a great defense, and Wisconsin had a great defense a year ago, and I think they'll be a good defense again, is you still got to be able to stop the run. And what's happened in the game of football has changed so much is that everybody's playing some version of man coverage.
Right.
And so you have enough defenders to stop it, but it goes back again to where are my eyes? My eyes are the most important thing. And I always tell those kids, hey, do your job. Right? Everybody has a job to do, and where you get in trouble is when guys try to do somebody else's job, and that's when you usually get gassed for a big play.
Coach, I think the other interesting trend that's developing, I'm seeing a lot more, I hear a lot more guys talk about it here in 2018 and in the off-season clinics leading up to this, talking about the pass screen option or the screen pass option where they're going to take a drop back, actually look for an initial read, something that's going to come out pretty quick, probably something in that 1.8 to 2.0 second range. And if it's not there, then they'll bring it back to the screen. And you see a situation where now they're essentially counting on defenders, you know, possibly playing the screen a little bit to ease up on that pass rush at times. Or at the same time, if they are coming, they're able to dump it off quick. With those kind of scenarios, kind of that half and half, it's a drop back, it's a screen play, what kind of approaches would you take to that? Or is there something you could think of that you would have as an answer to scheme that up?
Well, I don't know if there's an answer to scheme it up as much as it is the defensive linemen. They're always going to be caught in a catch 22 that way. It's kind of like, okay, get up the field, rush the passer, but then when they run a draw, the coaches yell at them because they ran up the field. And then the next time, they sit there and they play the draw, and the guy's got all day to throw the ball. So you really, I think the coaches have to control it, all right, versus the players. And when I say that, we always had calls to add on to our front to let the kids know, hey, if I give you a go or a rush call and you get trapped, that's on me. Or if I give you a rush call, all right, and they run a slip screen underneath you, that's on me. But they damn well better not be able to sit back there and throw the football in the pocket if I give you that call. So I always tried to put it more on myself or more on the coaches than I did on the kids.
Coach, I might be dreaming this or I don't know, memory, but you know, with my limited experience at coaching defensive line, are there some types of schemes, and I may have learned this from you, I might not, but to where in the situation what Keith is talking about, where you had at least one defensive lineman that he was going to play the pass. In other words, he wasn't screen or not. He was going to continue to the quarterback to make sure that the guy didn't stand back there. And everybody else might be playing some other version of what's happening. Is that something you've ever done, or am I dreaming that?
No. We used to do that. That's exactly right. We used to turn the ends loose, and we used to bull rush the two inside players. And their job was basically, again, keep good pass rush lanes, the inside players. Keep good pass rush lanes, and you play screens and draws and all those things. And then the outside guys, their job was to pressure the quarterback and get him to step up to the two big guys in the middle. And what you've seen, and of course Alabama's a great example because they do an excellent job there, but what you're seeing is, again, years ago, when I had Chris Zorich at Notre Dame, Chris was 250 pounds. Jeff Ahn was 240 pounds. Now what you're seeing is you're seeing nose guards and three techniques. You're seeing guys that are turning. Wisconsin's got a guy, I think it's 338 pounds or something, can do a standing backflip. So you're seeing bigger guys. And even towards the end of my career in college, we ended up with big 320, 330-pound nose tackle guys that could push the pocket and play the draws and the screens and to let the two outside guys, we used to say, let them eat. Let them just go. And it was automatic. The other thing, too, Charles, it was like an automatic, what we used to call a cover call. And what the automatic cover call meant was that if that five technique in can beat the guy inside, you know, he doesn't worry about containing it. He's going to beat him inside. And then whoever that technique is to his side, whether it be a one technique, a two technique, or a three technique, then it was his responsibility to cover the five technique's ass if the quarterback right. tried to get back outside, and that way you wouldn't lose contain.
Coach, we've been hitting. I have one other thing I just want to ask you before we let you go, and maybe Keith has one more thing, but we're talking a lot about, just like what Keith brought up, RPOs, screens, draws. As a high school coach coaching the defensive line, you're in a situation where you got to run down and you're playing the run and you've got to pass down, you're playing the pass. One of the hardest things that I don't know if it was teaching it or just to get them to do it was a play action pass situation. You mentioned it earlier, where essentially you have to recognize what's happening to you and transition. That a combination of that transitioning from run to pass, or it might be, as you mentioned earlier, your role in playing an outside screen inside out, or it might be a draw retrace. What things did you do in practice? I mean, were there just specific drills that you did just to ingrain it into your defensive lineman's head that when you see this, it's got to kick in, you're part of the overall scheme?
Yes, we did these drills at least three times a week, and it was draw retrace. Which, again, you're getting vertical up the field, ball's handed off, stick your foot in the ground, and you're coming back to the line of scrimmage, all right, retracing your steps. And then the other thing that we did, and we had very, very good success over the years, is we used to call it a screen angle drill, which as we get up the field, and whether it's a slip screen or whether it's a jailbreak screen where they're throwing the ball outside, again, stick your foot in the ground, open up to the side of the throw, and run at a 45-degree angle. The key was the first defender, the first defensive lineman running out there was he had to keep the ball in the funnel, which meant he couldn't let the ball come back and go across his face. He had to keep the ball in the funnel, and then the next inside defensive lineman would cut at a 45. The backside tackle would cut at a 45. The backside end would cut at a 45 when the ball came out. So what you did is you set up a picket fence. And by setting up a picket fence, right, if the outside contain player does what he's supposed to, turns it back inside, if the linebacker or the safety does what he's supposed to, place nose up on it, what they're doing is they're turning the football back to you all the time, which you should be able to limit those plays either for tackle for losses or a minimum of a 4 or 5 yard gain. And what happens is when guys get sloppy with their footwork and they take the time to round, I always used to tell them, if you take this, you know how long it takes you to round something off versus stick your foot in the ground and open up and plant? I mean, it's just like you lose 2 seconds of time. 2 seconds is the difference between winning and losing or making a play. So we always did spend a fair amount of time on draw retraces and what we called screen angle so that we could pin those jailbreak screens.
Did you have a specific drill for transitioning from a run down to a play action? And I know some of that's just athletic ability, but did you have anything that you worked on in practice with that?
The only thing that we did, and most of the time, it was always the hardest on the three techniques. Nose guards were going to get pinned inside regardless.
Right.
And they just had to kind of – what we used to do is, like, when people gave any kind of slide protection is we'd work back out to the next down lineman and try to bull rush him to try to push the pocket a little bit. And what we used to do is we obviously would play off the slide, cross faces, and then I'd always have another lineman, even though it was usually a back, but I'd have another lineman in my drills come and knock the hell out of the three technique or the five technique or whatever it was, just to have them get used to being ricocheted. But other than that, I don't think there was a whole hell of a lot you could do under the circumstances except keep your feet moving. Never stop your feet. Always fight pressure and try to push it vertical up the field. I think that's all you can do. I wish I had a secret. I don't.
Well, the play action part of it puts the offense at a little bit of a disadvantage too. So, well, Coach, that was great. Keith, you got anything else?
No, Coach. I just want to say, one of the first books I read as a young coach, and I started coaching when I was 19, was Lou Holtz, Notre Dame, The Fighting Spirit, about the championship season. And I know you were quoted in there throughout, I had the opportunity to coach Chris Zwirich. So it's pretty neat to be talking to you here about defensive technique and those kinds of things. But if you would, I guess just share something about that season that you remember and sticks out and that, I guess, had a positive effect on the way your career developed.
First of all, I learned a lot of football from Coach Holtz. And the one thing you could never do is you could never make him happy. So he was always, he was always demanding. If you won 24-10, you should have won 34-3. I mean, it was never good enough. So, from a young coach's standpoint, it was always frustrating because like one day, let me tell you something. You guys are the greatest coaches I've ever been around. And the next day, it'd be you guys couldn't coach Pop Warner football. So it was like he always kind of kept you guessing, I guess. It kept you working. It kept you pushing. But I learned an extreme amount of football, particularly on the fundamental side from him. Just a quick story with Zorich, because it's funny. I was just up there for the reunion for the Michigan game. And when we were talking about this, I remember, and I don't remember the game that it happened in, but Zorich jumped off sides. And I just ripped his fanny and I pulled him out of the game. And he goes, hey, relax, coach. I go, bullshit. I don't know if I can say that.
Yeah.
I said, you just cost us 5 yards. He goes, I'll get it back and then some. I put him in the next play, sacked the quarterback for like minus 12. he just came off the field just laughing his rear end off because, I mean, he had that kind of confidence, and those were the kind of kids that we coached. They were not only were they great football players in my mind, but they were great kids, and they were great competitors, and They loved the game, and they loved everything that Notre Dame stood for. Notre Dame's one of those schools, you love them or you hate them, and I love them, mm-hmm. and I always will. But it was just a unique experience to be able to be there. And when I was there, we were 24-1. I think we lost one game, and that was the Miami game at the end of the 89 season, which I thought we even had a better, because we won 11 games in a row, but we played the extra game that year, and we lost to Miami the last game, and then we came out. Colorado went to number one. I think Miami was two, and we were three. And then we pretty much beat Colorado up pretty much in the Orange Bowl that year. And we thought we would jump Miami and go back to number one, but they elevated Miami, and we ended up number two. And to this day, I think Lou still feels like, and I do, that we got robbed.
2 years of a pretty good run, though.
And oh, yeah. It was great.
Not many people can say they've got one of those rings that you have, too. So that's great. Coach, thank you very much for being a part of this today.
Yeah,
thank you, Coach. I appreciate you asking me. I enjoyed my time with you guys. So thanks, and good luck to you.
Thanks, Coach. Well, Coach, you're definitely right in your introduction in saying that Coach is very focused on technique and fundamentals, and that really came through in the interview.
I thought that's what it would be like, and it did not disappoint. He is as passionate about defensive line play as you're going to find. And as you can tell, he speaks a language that is very detailed, even when we're on a podcast like we are here. That just translates. It's translated throughout his career. I mean, you look at the people that he's coached, whether it's Chris Dorridge, 1990 Lombardi Trophy winner. I mean, he coaches for 15 years at the University of Wisconsin with Barry Alvarez. And, I mean, he's got four first-team All-Americans in that time. And I think there were four first-team Big Ten guys. And in 2004, his entire defensive line at the University of Wisconsin got drafted. That doesn't happen at a lot of places. It might happen at Alabama every year or something like that, but it's that's quite a feat. Once again, what I will do is get with Coach Palermo and get some of those drills that he was talking about, and we'll get those drawn up, and we'll get them on the USA Football website and the First Down Playbook website so that you guys can incorporate that, because that's the one thing that stood out to me a little bit. He kept coming back to it about the changes and the differences in football. But when you were talking about the RPOs, or when I was bringing up the play action passes, screens and draws, there are some things in football that never change. And a lot of the things that he was talking about fall under that category, because even if you're playing the defensive line, you've got to have your fundamentals before the ball snapped, when the ball is snapped, and then recognizing what's going on. And trust me, the one thing that he may not have talked a lot about in the deal, if you did not give great effort and if you were not flying to the football, you were going to have a 6'5", 6'6", really huge Italian guy on top of you in a hurry if you did not do that.
Well, Coach, it was a treat to have him on the phone and talk some defensive line play with him. I look forward to our next interview in the following week. We're rolling through the season here, Coach. I can't believe how fast it's going. But it's always great to spend time with you here every week and talk some ball.
Thank you, Keith, and good luck to all of you out there going through your football season right now.
It was great to hear Coach Palermo talk about technique. And if you're interested in getting some technique, some drills for your defensive line or offensive line right now, I suggest you check out footballdevelopment.com. Once you register, you have access to three free videos. Look at the pillar technique for defensive linemen and the bridge technique for offensive linemen. There's some great drills in there. It's a great resource available right now at a discount. Take a look at that at footballdevelopment.com.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.